Welcome to our podcast. This is Friends on Fire.
I'm Mike. I'm a lifelong devotee of financial independence. I even wrote a book about it.
And I'm Maggie, a newer convert, but just as passionate, especially on the intersection of minimalism and financial independence. We're one and the
same. We are two like-minded friends who believe that talking about money with your friends and family opens the door to financial well-being.
The Friends on Fire podcast is about dispelling myths, building financial acumen, and sharing your financial independence journey with the people you care about.
This is Friends on Fire.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Maggie.
Hi, Deandra.
Hi, guys.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's nice to be here. I've been a short-term listener, but been loving your content.
Yeah, oh, I appreciate that. I was trying to think what's the like a short-term listener, long-time. Well, I was trying to think what the phrase would be that goes with
Yeah. Long-time fan of FI.
Yeah.
Short-term, but enthusiastic listener.
Yeah,
I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, great.
Yeah.
Well, we are excited to have you here today. I was actually introduced to you. This is the first time we're, you know, meeting on video, but I was introduced to you from Jessica with the Fioneers, who you know. And Jessica reached out a while ago and was like, you should talk to Deandra. She would be a great interview, and just a new sort of angle that we've talked about a lot of things similar to what we're going to talk about today, but I'm not sure we've ever kind of triangulated them all. So I'm looking forward to this discussion. So let me tell our listeners just a little bit about you. So you are half of what's called That Science Couple. Yes. And I believe you're married to the other half. So
I am.
Mike and I are just, we're friends on fire. You are the science couple, a true couple. Okay, so Deandra and her husband, Bradley, are a plant-based 30-something couple living in Wisconsin, but from Maryland. Brad, is it Brad or Bradley? What do you call him?
Brad.
Yeah. Okay, let's call him. Since he's not here, we're definitely going to call him Brad. So Brad has a master's in environmental biology, and you, Deandra, in case you weren't aware, are a PhD student in nutritional sciences, and you have a passion for evidence-based nutrition. So they started this blog called That Science Couple because they shared a love of biology and seeking the truth. I love that explanation, by the way.
Thanks.
They started this plant-based newsletter for their close friends and family and then extended it into this blog. And it's an extension of all the things they're passionate about. So evidence-based science nutrition, advice for long-term health, personal finance, as well as sustainable living. And so we're going to talk about all of these things today. And I'm really excited because, like I said earlier, this is a lot of topics that we love talking about, and it's exciting to kind of bring them all together. Is there anything else that you want to start with just in terms of an introduction about yourself before we jump in?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a good boiled down approach to it. So I think we can go with that one.
Okay, yeah. Sounds good.
All right, so we're going to talk a lot about nutrition and healthy eating today, which I'm very interested in. I'm not sure if you follow us on Instagram, but like half the posts are Maggie's pictures of food and all of her like plant-based dishes. So like this is perfect for us.
Nice.
But with all of our interviews, we like to start things off at the beginning. And I'd like to hear a little bit about your childhood and how you were raised financially and how you think it impacted your life today.
Oh, that's a great question. And since I'm a listener, I actually knew to think about this one.
Oh, good. is that like cheating?
No, I think a little bit, but it's okay.
Oh, that's called research.
I'm academic.
Yeah, that's called research. Oh, nice. She picked up that we ask everybody this question.
Exactly. Okay. So my family, so I'm one of four children. And when I was young, my dad was working. So it was a one income household. And then when I got around middle school was when my mom started her own business. So she had that business for about 7 years. And basically with that business, she was able to pay for some of our hobbies. So me and my sister were dancers, and competition is very expensive. So she was able to kind of cash flow that part of our growing up, which was really awesome. And I think the one main thing that I learned from growing up in my family was that if you're going to spend money, it has to be a sale. And that's how you present. Like, you don't present what you spent, you present what you saved first. And so that's what I was trained to do as a young kid.
I love that.
I love that. Except when I present what I saved to Mike, he then turns it around back on me and reminds me I didn't really save anything when I bought something that I didn't need. So it's like this circular logic where, but I like the spirit of what you're talking about there.
It didn't always work out, but you know, that was my mom's line. And then my dad would be like, but you still spent money.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we did. So
I like it, but you clearly had some very active and intentional discussions and awareness of money and what things cost and things like that as a kid, which I think is really helpful to build some of the foundational awareness and skills you need as an adult to manage money.
Absolutely.
Okay. So moving on from your childhood, tell us a little bit more about your broader money story. Like, when did you really get your finances in shape and what kind of prompted it? And just a little bit about that story.
Yeah. So when I went to college, I got my bachelor's and my parents paid for that, which was great. But then I knew I wanted to like kind of take it a step further in the sciences. Having a bachelor's doesn't go as far as it does in other fields. So I wanted to do a master's. And when I was applying to a program that I was looking at, I told myself the only way that I would go into the program is if I had it paid for. So I said, I'm absolutely not taking out loans. And if I can't get a job that will cover this, then I'm not doing it all. And then I was actually able to get a teaching assistantship position for that one. So luckily I was able to go through my master's with no debt. And then when I graduated with that, I went into the industry. And so it took a little bit of time for me to get my first job. But when I did, that's where I met the other half of that science couple, Brad. So that was a really nice introduction into biotech and also into a world where you're not exactly using your degree for your job, but you have a job. So, you know, that's good. So coming from that, it took me 6 months to get a job coming out of my master's, which was really, you know, tough and very humbling to go into kind of one of those easier jobs where you're like, a high schooler could have done this rather than, you know, your current credentials. But when I moved from that, I basically went through like 3 or 4 different jobs and I was just trying to earn more money. So my focus was, how can I move up in the field? How can I earn more money? And actually, when I was in my master's, I got diagnosed with thyroid cancer at 23. And so that kind of shaped it, my career, that I went in knowing like, look, I've already had this and it could be, you know, I don't know if I'll make it till I'm 40 or if I'll live longer than that. But I had this kind of like pushing forward, like impotence, like I need to do this now. And that if I get stuck in a place, like that might be all I do. So for me, going through and having one job and then not having a growth ladder with that, I kind of needed to keep moving forward. So I took a lot of like opportunities that I would not have otherwise, and worked at a startup for a while. So I took a lot of like big risk moves. And so the financial part that came in with this is that we started saving, you know, like everyone does, like, okay, you get your 401k, you do your 10% match, and that's good, right? But for us, we said that that wasn't good enough. So we moved in together pretty early in our relationship. And then when we did that, it cut my now husband's rent in half. So he was saving money, but I was spending more money to live with him. So it was really interesting in that, like, I had to spend the most on rent that I ever had, and he was spending the least. So what we wanted to do, like, long-term was to be able to travel more. None of us had left the country before, and that was something that we looked back and said that we'd regret if we hadn't done that. And so we decided to plan a trip, an international trip to Ireland. And that was our big thing. And we saved for, I think, at least 6 months as we were planning for this trip, and we were paying down our debt. But at the time, we had hit a rental increase, and we did our number crunching and found out that if we stay in this apartment, we won't be able to make our trip. And that was kind of the turning point for us, that do you want a shiny apartment, or do you want to travel?
So on your blog, you talk about the three keys to a balanced life. And I can kind of tell by your story, even starting from your childhood, how you are like getting towards this. So I'm interested, multi-part question for you. When did you and Brad kind of form these three keys and kind of align on them? And then also, if you can explain to our listeners what they are and how they interrelate. I really like the Venn diagram you have on your website.
If you could
describe that in detail for people who can't see it visually, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, sure. Luckily, I did have that post up here because I was like, this might be the one. Okay, great. Yeah, so the three keys to financial life. So when we first started the blog, Brad, he was saying that we should just niche down, right? We should just pick one thing and then be focused on it. But there were so many people that had just straight financial independence blogs that were like, well, we're not there yet. So I really like to combine everything. And for me, I think that you need to look at people as a whole person. So you can't really isolate, like when I had cancer, doctors only saw me as my disease. And they're like, what can I do for that specific thing? But they never saw me as a person. And so when we started to do this blog, I said, we're just going to combine all the things that we're really passionate about. And then, you know, if we niche down later, then we do. So far we've kind of kept all three of them going. We don't post as frequently on all the topics, but the three keys that we have are financial independence. The next one is like health or lifestyle medicine. And the final one is minimalism. And so I was thinking about like, why do we get into these different communities? Like, what is it about these groups that individually have drawn us in? Because we got really like, when we went plant-based, we were telling everyone to go plant-based. When we found the financial independence movement, we were doing the same thing too. And then minimalism, we're like, you guys need to downsize all your stuff. So we're very like passionate about it. And so that was our question, is like, so what is drawing all of these things together? And so in the Venn diagram that we have on our blog, I show that what is overlapping is that they all bring clarity to a challenging topic. So that basically, if you are lost in this field, you're not really sure how to deal with your finances, you're not sure how to deal with your health, then if you find this group of people, they will have the answers. So I thought that was really awesome. And then they really do require a commitment. So you have to do something yourself. So, you know, you can go and get a financial advisor and they can tell you what to do, or you can play an active role in your finances. And the same thing goes with health. You can go and get medications, or you can take it on yourself to exercise more, sleep better, eat healthier, all those kind of things. And then like minimalism also kind of falls into that too. So minimalism, like you need to actively say that I'm going to be more conscious of the decisions that I make, the purchases I make. I might spend more on something, but it's going to last. And so that really does, I think, require a commitment as well. And then the last one being the community. Just having so many people, there's so much support and so much caring in all these groups that everyone really wants to help you, so that it's not just, you know, blanket information. There's the support behind it.
Yeah, I love that.
I love that. Going back to what you said at the very beginning, just for fun, I'm curious, when your husband was trying to get you to pick one,
yeah,
what would it have been if you had to? It was like trying to get you to pick your favorite child or something.
Though. Yeah. So I think at that moment, it would have been the financial independence. And the reason for that is, the reason our name is That Science Couple is because we were talking about, like, hypothetically, we go to a FinCon or some sort of convention like that. What do we want people to know us as? Yeah. And so that's where we came up with That Science Couple. Like, oh, we're That Science Couple. Where do you ask your science questions? Well, you can go to us. We wanted to be of resource for people. So if you had questions, because our friends and family were already asking us random science things, like any reunion we had or family gathering, it was like, okay, I need to ask you about this thing. And it didn't even always have to relate to what our field was, but it was really funny because they would just know they're the ones to ask.
That science couple will know for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's good branding.
I know. I like it. And by the way, I'm a big fan of you not picking one niche thing and, you know, like you said, taking the holistic approach, because I think you're right. There are things to be gained from all of those. Mm-hmm. So one I want to dig a little bit deeper in is you talk about medicine, and I don't know if you just said it now, but I know you say in your blog, you talk about lifestyle medicine a lot. Mm-hmm. Can you define that and kind of just talk to us about what it is and what some of the benefits of it are?
So lifestyle medicine is treating the individual as a whole, and it has several different components that are related to health. So it's nutrition, becoming intentional about eating for health, physical activity, which is integrating exercise into your everyday life, sleep, which is working towards restorative sleep, mindfulness by managing stress and being in the moment, which is a challenge for a lot of us, and then also having support. So surrounding yourself with positivity and with people that will uplift you and support your healing.
Have you heard the term functional medicine? Like, is that the same thing as lifestyle medicine, or are they different?
Yeah, so they do overlap. Functional medicine, they do look more at your whole environment and everything like that. So I think with the lifestyle medicine, it's more dramatic in some of the changes that you make. So functional medicine will be like, okay, are you sleeping okay? Okay, here's a melatonin. Versus that if you are looking more at lifestyle medicine, then it's looking deeper into that. So like, why aren't you sleeping? And does it have something to do with, like, for instance, when you finish eating? So one of the things I've told my clients is that if you can stop eating 2 hours before bed, then you will stop your digestion before you go into your sleep cycle. So you'll be more well-rested. So it's a little bit more detailed than the functional medicine might be. And then the lifestyle medicine is actually branded by Dr. Dean Ornish. And so he's one of the, like, fathers of the plant-based nutrition movement. And so he's even shown that through nutrition, you can even, you can prevent and reverse heart disease is one of the things he's worked on. And then he's also worked on slowing and even reversing prostate cancer through lifestyle modification, which is really awesome.
That's super fascinating. And I just Googled Dr. Dean Ornish when you were talking about him. I've totally seen him before. I just didn't make the connection to the face and the name.
So he's definitely a pioneer in the field, and his program for heart disease is the first one that's actually been covered by Medicare and Medicaid. So it's actually accepted by insurances, and it's really awesome.
It's fascinating that you mention the Reversing Heart Disease book. And I know there's a couple that have been written, but my dad passed away almost 10 years ago now, and he had cancer and heart disease and a number of different things, but was fairly unhealthy for, you know, he had diabetes, just a bunch of things. He was given that book and pretty much told by a doctor at Emory that he could reverse a lot of his conditions with some lifestyle choices. He didn't make them. I'm not saying he didn't do some things, but he wasn't, I don't think there was as much, I don't know if research is the right word, but like there was not as much kind of evidence that was mainstream that really, I think it seemed sort of like an out there thought, right? Not a, this is possible. And let me, like, now I feel like there's documentaries where people, you know, I can't think of the one where, you know, someone like starts eating healthy for a short period of time and she gets off like all of her medicine within like 3 months. Right. And there's just, I think there's a lot more, it's become a lot more mainstream that there are things you can do in this space. But I just think it's fascinating because I often think, and it makes me really sad to think, had my dad changed the way he lived, you know, in the last 10 years of his life, he'd still be around today.
Yeah.
Right. And like, so I use that as a personal story of how powerful the idea of lifestyle medicine can be and some of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think that's why we kind of like evangelize it. We want to spread the word. We want to tell everyone Because I'm right there with you that like when I changed, I wanted to save my family too. So like, luckily we were able to get to like our parents, my parents shifted over and have since been kind of in between. But like that made a big deal and difference. And then my husband, like his mom had, definitely like gone and tried to be like more vegetarian, and that made a big difference for her as well. So we were trying to save the people around us, like almost in a selfish way, but then like unselfish because we're like, but we want you to feel better. And so if you're not feeling good, and food and like this lifestyle medicine can help, then why not try that? Because if you're looking at surgery or medications, like that's really drastic. But, you know, exercising a little bit more, like we can all do that, right?
So Deandra, it's interesting when we're talking about these kind of relatively easy lifestyle changes. And I think that's, Maggie, to your point, something that's been a little more recent as people have understood some of the marketing and economic effects of lifestyle that we have just incorporated into our lives over the past few decades. And we know them to be wrong. We know them to be unhealthy, and we know them to be like easy to reverse or easy to change, I should say. I'm interested in your thoughts though on, you listed off a few different areas of focus within lifestyle medicine, and you talk about a holistic approach to combining all of them. And I sort of see some parallels with personal finance, because if you really want to do well personal finance, like there's a whole bunch of things like, you know, cut your spending, track your expenses, focus on your net worth, you know, all that sort of stuff. And you need to be doing all of it if you want to make a big improvement. And I think your approach is, you know, you should be doing all of these things with lifestyle medicine to get the biggest bang for your buck. I'm getting to a question, I promise.
Sounds so, like my kind of question.
I know. Maggie's rubbing off on me. What is the power of combining all of these things versus being selective in them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I have thought about this a little bit. So before, like as an analytical person, I'm a scientist, I used to want to do just one thing. Because if you do that one thing and you succeed, then you have your data point and you know exactly what it was. I changed this and I got the end result, right? A plus B equals C. But then I realized with lifestyle, it doesn't work that way. Like you can do that, but it's so slow. So like if you were to, you know, just work on paying, you know, credit card bills and then like never cut your spending or, you know, never start investing, then you're going to be missing out, right? So it's the same thing with the lifestyle medicine, that you could do it slowly, but it's going to maybe take you 5 to 10 years to get to that point. Or we can just try to do it all at once and, you know, be thinking of it as like the life is now, and this is when I need to make the change. And if you're motivated to get healthy, then you might as well go across the gambit. You might as well try to incorporate as much as you can at once. And if it gets a little overwhelming, then take something off the list. Like it's no harm, no foul to say that was too much and take a step back.
Yeah. I like the idea of if you have found your motivation, try to leverage all of these things while you can, and then scale it back. It's a reasonable approach. It's a non-threatening approach to a lifestyle change.
Yeah.
So Deandra, where would you recommend people get started if they're hearing all this and they're like, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but I can't do it all tomorrow. I've got to, like you said, maybe they don't need to isolate it to have different data points, but they just literally can't start doing it all tomorrow. It might take a few weeks to build things in. Like, where do you suggest somebody begins?
Yeah, so I think some of the low-hanging fruit, pun intended.
low-hanging vegetables.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah. So one of the things, I had a seminar that I did a ways back, which was called Freedom and Health. So I took all of these segments and I broke them down and said, for if you wanted to get started on lifestyle medicine today and you wanted some small things that you could be able to work on to get some of those results starting, then what I did was I had this freedom and health workshop, and I kind of gave these like small actionable steps that you could be able to do one at a time or all together. And so for nutrition, my number one recommendation is to start with a daily smoothie. And so when we say smoothie, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, I love smoothies. They have lots of fruit and ice cream and yogurt. And nope, that's not
the kind of smoothie. That sounds like a milkshake when you say
ice cream. Yeah, yeah. Milkshake, at least when I started, I thought that was a smoothie in my mind, was more of like a dessert thing. So the difference with a smoothie for your health is that it should be about 75% greens, but to make it more palatable, you can start with like a 50-50 split, and then you would put in any sort of berries that you like. So blueberries will turn it brown, so just a warning on that. But if you like mangoes or bananas, those will keep it nice and vibrant and green. And then you can add one or two tablespoons of flaxseed to that, and that will give you your source of healthy omega-3s that are good for your brain. And so very simple smoothie, and then you would just add water to it. So any high-powered blender, Nutribullet, thing like that would work. So that's a number one. So you just start your day with that. Then if you're looking to increase your physical activity, I really like this technique. It's called the Pomodoro method. So I don't know if you've talked about it on the show before.
I don't think we've talked about it, but it's the like 21 minute, right?
Yeah. 25 minute.
Yeah. 25 minute. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's to help improve focus. And so if you are one of those people that you're sitting like all day long and like you just are glued to your chair, then if you set a timer for 25 minutes and then you would like work consistently for the 25 minutes, then at that 5 minute point, when it goes off, you would get up and walk around. So you get away from your desk, get some fresh air if you can, or just walk around your house or apartment. And so that gives you a physical activity break. So the idea of sitting for 8 hours straight and then going to the gym at the end of the day is great hypothetically, but we've noticed for circulation in the research that if you can break it up and have smaller amounts throughout the day, then that's actually more beneficial than working out really hard after such a long sedentary time.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I don't think I have it on my new phone, but I had an app called like the Pomodoro timer. Uh-huh. And yeah, it just helped to like let you have those, you know, focus spurts of time and then like a little break to, you know, go get up, walk around, drink some water or whatever. Yeah. I love the concept of it. I can't say I've stuck with it, but I mm-hmm. love the concept of it.
Okay, random question for you. How do you feel about like setting up a treadmill with your laptop in front of it and like walking for 8 hours a day?
Okay. So I don't know if you've seen Dr. Michael Greger's videos.
I've watched a lot of his videos, but I've not seen one about the treadmill walking.
Okay. Yeah. So I think he's moved to a couple of different places. So he doesn't always have a treadmill, but he is one of the big plant-based epidemiologists, actually. So he studies the nutrition field on a broad sense.
Nutritionfacts.org, right?
Nutritionfacts.org, exactly. So he's a great source. If you have questions about foods, I go right there. So that's great. But so he used to actually have a treadmill underneath his desk. So he would do these webinars and he would be talking as he was on the treadmill and he would just do that. So I don't do that. I like the Pomodoro method. But I think that if you are someone who like has those back-to-back meetings and you don't have any time, then that treadmill desk would be great.
Cool.
I always pictured it logistically being an issue. Like I just, sometimes I can't like walk and talk at the same time. Yeah. I guess you would get used to it, you know, but mm-hmm. I just think, I just picture like everything falling at some point.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, he did it well, but I guess it's supposed to be a low gradual pace.
It's a very slow. Yeah. It's a super slow
not
pace.
Not like walking with friends outside or something.
Yeah. I think you're walking on like a one on the tread, like a very, very slow pace. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know what we're get us back on track, DeAndre.
Yeah. Okay. So then I think we left off. The next one was sleep. So my strategy for this is, I know there's a lot you can do about your sleep environment, but for me, sleeping was more of a mental thing. So I would have anxiety in the middle of the night. I'd wake up and I have my brain was racing because I'm like, I need to do all these things. The stock market is going down. What is happening? You know, et cetera, et cetera. So my strategy that I've come up with is to do a brain dump. So there's only anecdotal evidence for this, which a lot of psychology is just test it out and try it. So I'm okay with that, that there's not like a randomized clinical control trial, double blind placebo thing for this. Like it doesn't need to be that. It's just that write down anything that's in your head before you go to bed. So if it takes you a half an hour, then it takes you half an hour. If you wake up in the middle of the night, get a pen and paper or your notepad app on your phone and just write until your brain is empty. Because if you have tasks, things that you don't want to forget, your brain is trying to remind you. So that's why you're waking up. You're like, it's like, oh, I don't want to forget this. And that's the only way that I found to be able to like clean the slate and then be able to go back to sleep.
Yeah, I love that method. I've heard it before. Mm-hmm. But like I was saying on something else, like I don't practice it regularly, but hearing mm-hmm. you say these things all together, and honestly, even just your back to your reference about like that science couple, mm-hmm. I just immediately feel like she probably knows better than I do. And that seems like a good idea.
That seems like a good idea. Well, I just research, you know, all the resources are out there. And that's the awesome part is that we have this, you know, knowledge sharing awesome thing in our pocket, you know, in our cell phones, and we can have all the knowledge in the world at our fingertips. And
but that's part of the problem is all the knowledge in the world is overwhelming, right? And so when I hear like a list from someone like you, I'm like, okay, I can focus on that list. But then when I turn to, you know, Instagram or just, mm-hmm. you know, a magazine or, you know, legitimate publications, like I'm overwhelmed with, you know, ideas and options and opinions and voices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Information overload. You'd rather just watch cat videos.
Yeah. No, I'd rather just listen to you tell me what I should do.
Okay.
Like, I trust her.
Trust me. Okay. So then I think the next one that we want to talk about is mindfulness. So this one was really hard for me. But what I came up with this one was, there's this really old book by Dale Carnegie, and it's How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. So I think it was written in the 40s, but there's an audio version of it if people are audio fans. And so his premises was to live in day-tight compartments, which I thought was really interesting. So like, don't worry about the future. And just worry about today, because tomorrow you can worry about tomorrow. And so with this, I was inspired to kind of pick up another idea that is like, if everything is important, then nothing is. So I try to pick between one and three tasks a day that I want to accomplish, because if you're multitasking, then you're just going to have a lot of unfinished things.
Yeah, I'm curious when you started talking about mindfulness and then shifted a little bit more to kind of focus, which mindfulness certainly helps mm-hmm. with. I thought you were actually going to the meditation path. What are your thoughts on meditation?
Yeah, so meditation can take many different forms. For me, I was more of a like a walking meditation. So I will go to the park nearby my house and listen to Friends on Fire and meditate while listening to you guys.
It sounds like a great way to meditate.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for some people like meditation, like, oh, this is great. I can do this. But then for others, it can be more challenging because you're like just sitting with your thoughts. So I've actually, one of the things I've started doing for my health is going to a sauna a couple times a week to, you know, help detox and clear out all the toxins. And so I take that time and I just put on some like classical guitar music and I just sit and that's my meditation.
I like it.
So it's like, it's changing my environment. So I think that's why it works for me is it's a new environment. When I'm at home or in my office, I'm focused on all of the things like I should be doing this project, that thing. I need to do the dishes. But if you can remove yourself from that environment, then that might help for meditation.
Yeah, I like it. Okay, keep going. I love this list. We've got, you know, morning smoothies, the Pomodoro, brain dump before your bed. I like it.
Great. All right. So the last one I have here is about support. And so I like there's a PhD from Stanford University. Her name is Emma Sapalia. And her kind of summary for social support was that social connectedness generates a positive feedback loop. And so I really like that, that as you're reaching out to more people, that you're going to bring positivity to them, and then they're going to bring it back to you, and it's just going to keep going. So for my quick daily action, I suggest to, even if you're just so chaotically busy, to just like think about someone that you care about and just send them a quick text message to say, hi, was thinking about you. Life is crazy, I know. But, you know, even if you only spend 5 minutes a day doing that, you're going to have that person that you reach out to is going to feel cared about. And then they will likely respond to you. So even if they're not getting back right away, they're getting back in a couple of days. It's, you've put out the olive branch.
Okay, so pull that list back together. Like,
yeah,
those are the things, like define what you would kind of, I don't know, call that. I think we were starting on like where to get started, right? So those are some of the things that you suggest people get started with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the daily actions, you can start your day with a daily smoothie. Then as you get working, you can do the Pomodoro technique. So set your 25-minute timer. Work, take a 5-minute break and get up and walk around. Then you want to pick 1 to 3 tasks. So for your mindfulness, make sure that you're being focused and you're being conscious about what you want to achieve, and only choose 1 to 3 priorities, because if everything is important, then nothing is. And then when you're on your 5-minute Pomodoro break, if you have already done your walking around, the next one you can do is text a family or friend, text a family member or friend. And then as you're getting ready at the end of the day to go to sleep, you want to get out your Getting Things Done app or Notepad or something like that.
Yeah.
And you want to brain dump. So flush out all the thoughts from the day, any unfinished tasks, get them out of your head.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate you even wrapping that into kind of the start and end of a day. It's a nice way to think about it.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that I'd love to kind of wrap up on is we talked a little bit about nutrition kind of throughout this discussion, but you have this list on your blog of 7 initial steps to improve your health through nutrition. I'd love for you to just walk through those 7 steps, because I think a lot of people, you know, respond to like a list or a to-do list. And I think it's a great list. And I'd love to just, you know, kind of hear you walk us through it.
Okay. So this is a free resource that's available at our blog. It's a printable tracker. And basically, we created it saying, doesn't matter where you're starting, but I wanted to give you something that you could have as a way to see where you are, to set your baseline. And so for nutrition, I had 7 components that you could track on a daily basis. And then you would watch this over a month and see how many out of that 7 you're getting on average. And then if you are doing really well and you're, I think I said like 4 or 5 out of 7, then we have an Eat for Health Tracker Level 2, which goes into a little bit more detail. So for the Eat for Health Tracker Level 1, the first thing I have on there is fiber. So I say start with a fiber-fueled breakfast. And so you can have oatmeal or whole grains. But the point of this is that it's a nutrient that a lot of Americans actually lack in their diet. And so if you have problems with regularity, then you might need more fiber in your diet. And so fiber is only found in plants. And so when you think of like muscle fiber, that is a different type of fiber. So meat does not have fiber in it, even though I know up to apparently 50% of Americans think that it has fiber.
Let me ask you a question on fiber. Can you have too much fiber?
So no, you cannot have too much fiber. But if you have a high fiber diet, then you want to make sure that you're hydrating well. So I think the standard recommendation, the RDA, which just says how much should you have in a day, is about 25 grams of fiber. But if you are mostly like vegetarian or vegan, then you're probably closer to like 50 grams a day. So that's usually my goal, is to have, like with any of the clients I work with, get at least 50 grams of fiber a day. But it's not uncommon to see some days that might be like 70 or 75 grams.
Okay. I mean, I was asking for a friend, but just kidding. I get a lot of fiber, and I've always wondered, like, can I overdo it? Luckily, I also drink a lot of water.
Yeah. There's a tribe called the Hadza tribe, and they're in Africa, and they get up to 100 grams of fiber in a day. So
what are they eating? Just a lot of?
A lot of tubers. So a lot of like potatoes and root vegetables, but they're actually not vegan. So they do eat meat, but they are still in the hunter-gatherer kind of tribe setting. So when they don't have a lot of animal proteins, then they're eating the plants. So that's why they're so high in fiber. And they have the lowest rates of like cancer doesn't exist there, and heart disease doesn't exist. And it's really crazy to see how like we've processed our food so much that we're creating some of these diseases.
I mean, back to the point we've made a couple of times here on just the evidence research based, I am still fascinated how much research and evidence exists out there, yet how unhealthy we are as a society.
Oh yeah.
Just leave it at that on not giving people a hard time, but we'll go back to your Eat for Health list because I hope it inspires people.
Yeah, sure. I know we could talk about that all day. Maybe come back on the podcast again later.
Yeah. Well, you'll come back for part two, which you teased us with.
So number two on the tracker is eat your greens. So the suggestion is to add one cup of greens to the daily smoothie. So it kind of goes to that list that we already talked about. And so the green leafy vegetables, it can be pretty much anything you can think of. So spinach, kale, arugula, Swiss chard. Just don't consider like iceberg lettuce. Like that's not really a good green leafy vegetable. We want some of the heartier ones. And the reason for this is because they actually contain the precursors to nitric oxide. So that will help to dilate your blood vessels and promotes blood flow. So if you have high blood pressure, then this is something that would help. And it can also help to reverse those plaques in the arteries, like the Prevent and Reverse Heart Disease book by Caldwell-Esselstyn. So that one's a very important one. So just do that with a daily smoothie. Then it goes to the fiber question you had. So hydration, I pair that with this as well, because I noticed even myself that if I wasn't tracking it, then like how much did I actually have? So you want to hydrate consistently. And a way to do this is to space it out by just having like two glasses of water per meal. So you can have like one before your meal if you're concerned about that you maybe eat a little too much than you would like, then drinking it before will actually fill you up and then you won't want to eat as much. So that's a little trick there. So you want this to be around 72 ounces a day, but it really is just dependent on like actually the color of your urine. So you want it to be like straw colored. So if you're really clear, then that's too much water. And if it's really dark, then it's not enough. So that's kind of a trick there.
I feel like, Maggie,
I was about to share.
You haven't talked about the color of your urine.
I was literally about to let you both know the color of my urine. And I was going to be like, I think it's clear too often. I drink a lot of water. I don't think I drink too much, but based on your definition, I was like, oh, maybe I do drink too much.
Yeah. So I've seen some people that suggest like up to like 128 ounces a day. But so for that kind of realm, I would say that really depends on the color. Also, if you take a B12 supplement, then it will be yellow. And so you can't really use that as a marker anymore, unfortunately. But if you're only taking it like once a week, then it's a pretty accurate indicator.
Yeah. Okay, Mike, what color is your urine? And can you show us to prove it?
It's always clear. I am extremely well hydrated.
Wait, she just said clear is too well hydrated.
Too well hydrated.
You want it to be straw colored, Mike.
Well, then it's straw colored. I'm not paying too close of attention to it. So when we're talking about that Pomodoro or Pompadoro, whatever it is.
Pomodoro.
Yeah, I'm actually in the, I work for 5 minutes and then go walk around and drink water for 25 minutes.
Oh, he's the opposite.
I'm very well hydrated.
He's very relaxed and well hydrated.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. All right. So move on to number 4. So this one is introduce fermented foods. So you should have 1 serving per day. And if you're wondering, well, what counts as those fermented foods? That could be anything like sauerkraut, kimchi, kombucha, sourdough bread, yogurt, or tempeh. So it can be, it's basically this range of foods that has probiotics and then also insoluble fiber. So basically that's just fiber that we don't digest, but our gut microbiome can actually break it down and utilize it. And so it can improve the health of your gut overall. And it can actually help with like different mental health illnesses like depression, anxiety. Adding in these fermented foods is a good way to help strengthen your gut microbiome for that.
How do you feel about taking a probiotic versus those more natural approaches?
Yeah, so probiotics are great when you're taking them. So if you have an antibiotic that you're taking and then you take a probiotic after that, then it can help some. But I've heard the analogy of like, it's like you had a bathtub that you drained of water and that's the antibiotics. And then you throw in a cup of water and then try to take a bath. Like that's the probiotic. So you're going to colonize more by eating high fiber foods than you will from that probiotic. And once you stop taking the probiotic, you stop getting the benefit.
Okay. Interesting. Okay. What's next after fermented foods?
Okay. Fermented foods is fruits and vegetables. So this one I say it's improve snack time and swap out processed foods for whole foods. And so I recommend to have 2 servings of fruits a day, of fruits and vegetables a day between meals. So that when you're hungry, instead of grabbing for the Cheetos, you're grabbing an apple. And so just having these fresh foods, fruits and vegetables on hand, hummus and any chopped vegetables like celery or carrots. It doesn't even have to be like fancy vegetables. You can just have straight what you used to have in your lunchbox as a kid is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I eat the leftover vegetables from my kid's lunchbox.
Yeah.
So that's even better. They're lukewarm and they've been in a cafeteria, been sitting in a box in a cafeteria all day. But seriously, I actually do that sometimes. I read your article about a week ago in prep for this that talked about that. And I know things like this again, but it's like, I need to be reminded them. And I will give you credit for in the past week when I've been hungry between meals, I've been going like earlier today when I was hungry before dinner, I ate a bunch of pre-cut up peppers. You know, what do you call them?
Yeah,
peppers. Red and yellow and
peppers. Bell peppers.
Yeah, bell peppers. Thank you. And couldn't think of that word. And a mango. And I was like, I felt really good. I was like, I'm satiated and I've not just eaten a bunch of, you know, crap before dinner, which I sometimes do when I'm just, you know, really, really hungry. Mm-hmm. And so you're already influencing me.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. Okay. Yeah. And so I even put in there that you can't have too many. So you can have as much. So I have a friend who I'm working with in the coaching program. She is borderline diabetic. And so she asked me the question of like, how much fruit is too much? And actually there is no upper limit with fruit when it's unprocessed. So if you take that whole food, it may like spike your blood sugar initially when you have it, but as you eat it over time, then it'll level out and your blood sugar will not have that dramatic spike. And the reason is because it still has the fiber in it. So it's packaged in the way our body knows how to process it versus apple juice will spike your blood sugar really quickly. An apple will be more slow.
So interesting.
Okay. And then number six is healthy fats. This is my favorite one. So when we went plant-based, we didn't want to be the scrawny vegans. So we're like, how do you maintain a normal healthy weight? It's a big concern. So for this one, I have daily healthy fats of one serving of avocado, nuts, or seeds. So for an avocado, a serving is typically like one small avocado or a half if you get those mega ones. And then nuts or seeds would be about 2 ounces. And so this is a healthy serving of those omega-3s, which are beneficial for brain health. And so you have other foods that are high in omega-6s, which are not as healthy fats. But actually what matters is your ratio between omega-6s and omega-3s. So adding this can kind of bump that up. The last one that I had was, like I actually mentioned before, allowing time to digest. So stop eating any snacks and dessert and things like that at least 1 to 2 hours before bed. And so if you do this, then it allows your stomach to fully digest. And then when you go to sleep, it'll be more restful. So I can definitely tell when I have a late night snack or something, I don't sleep as well. But then when I cut it off, I say, stop eating at 8. And then, you know, I'll go to bed by 10. And that's plenty of time for digestion.
This is one I needed some influence on because I typically go with 1 to 2 minutes instead of 1 to 2 hours.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. I read this like a week ago, and I also have been eating less crap / food. I also make bad decisions late at night. So
okay.
I'm inspired even hearing that it will help my sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. If you do need to eat something like late before you're going to sleep, then you can actually choose one of the foods that's melatonin producing. Hmm. So one of the big ones is actually pistachio nuts.
Oh, so I you can just pistachios. Like have yeah.
a handful of pistachios, and then that'll at least put you on the right track of getting something that will help you sleep.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Good to know.
So what I like about this list is that, you know, Maggie, to your point, it's like, all of these things we have been told are good for us. We know them inherently by now, but the list is very approachable. Like, it's a very reasonable change to make to like adopt these and have a much healthier diet.
Yeah. Like, it's not like constricting your calories or some right. crazy.
Or like only eating red meat for a week and no carbs, like ridiculous stuff. Like this
paleo, I don't mean to knock some of those, but
I mean,
that's another episode.
You have some articles on your site actually about all of these kind of quote fad diets, right?
And I do. Yeah. Yeah.
So check them out.
So as you were wrapping up your list, you mentioned pistachios. The first thing that came to my mind was that they are expensive.
And so I knew you were going to go there.
I am interested in your thoughts about if somebody hears this list and they're like, this sounds great, but
I'm on a budget.
Do I need to go to Whole Foods and buy all this stuff? It sounds too expensive. So like, what tips can you give us to bring this back to the heart of our show, personal finance?
Yes,
what advice can you give our listeners about doing all this stuff on a budget?
Okay, of course. Yeah, I knew this one was coming. So I'm going to go back to, so we recently did an update post. We called it Accepting Inflation, Can You Be Frugal and Eat Healthy? And then so for this one, actually, when we first started the blog 2 years ago, I had people like, you know, asking me about like how expensive is it to eat healthy? And I was like, I just want to, you know, lay it out there and show that it's not that expensive. So on this post, I took the prices from 2020 for certain food items and then compared them to today's prices to see what inflation had hit. And so actually it was very interesting. So I had, since we were already plant-based back then, I had comparisons for rice and beans, because I know they always get knocked in the financial community. And I want to say once and for all that rice and beans are really healthy for you, and you could live to be 100 years old if that's what you learn how to eat on.
And I love rice and beans.
Yeah. Rice and beans are awesome.
They're actually, I mean, I don't want to eat them every single day, but I eat them at least once a week for dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. So the price for, I think it was, 5 pounds of rice, 1 pound of dried beans, 1 pound of dried lentils. And lentils are like kind of a flat bean that you put in curry. So Indian type dishes, and then one block of tofu because we need our protein. So I did this calculation. It was only $7.43. And actually every item in there was either the same as the 2020 prices or actually less. So the rice was actually like 17 cents less. So, you know, maybe it's buying power subsidies, but basically didn't change. And you're getting, it's almost a one-to-one ratio when you look at the pound per, the price per pound for this. And then I even like compared through like easy options. So say you, you know, don't like cooking beans and you want your tofu to already be pressed. Then I did this and I was basing it off of organics as well. So if you cherish that, there is the Dirty Dozen and the Clean 15. So you can look into those and that'll tell you which things to eat organic and what you actually don't need to eat organic. And so for this one, I looked through that. It was 2 pounds of brown rice. It was 1 can of pinto beans, 1 can of those lentils that, that were all organic, and then a block of already pressed tofu. So if you bought that, it was still under $10 a week. And so like, I thought this was really interesting. Like you're getting 3 servings of beans, like plenty of rice, more rice than you could eat in a week. 3 servings of lentils, 4 servings of tofu for $10. So when people say eating healthy is expensive, I'm like, well, it depends on what your food choices are. So you could do it for hypothetically with a bag of frozen vegetables thrown in there and some fresh fruit. You could, for a single individual, maybe get out for $40. We actually, our prices were around $100 a week before inflation. After inflation was about $125. And then we've shifted. So we are incorporating more cold pressed juices. So that's increased our price, but you can still do it for very, very cheap, very frugally.
I think, Deandra, first off, I love that article about accepting inflation. Can you be frugal and eat healthy? You've got some really cool cost comparisons around a plant-based diet and a meat diet and just the comparison of things over time. So we'll put a link in the show notes to it. But just as you were talking about that, it struck me that the point you're making is that you can eat healthy and frugally or, you know, on a budget in the same way that you can do anything on a budget, which is you sometimes need to be a little bit more thoughtfully intentional and mm-hmm. plan ahead and just, you know, think about what you're doing, not just walk into a store and buy a bunch of stuff.
Absolutely. Right?
And so I think it's like all things where we're trying to save money or just be more intentional with our money, it's going to require a little bit of upfront research and thought to do it well, but it's totally possible.
Yeah. And I know you guys are fans of Aldi's. So we used to shop there as well. We made the switch to Costco because of the bulk buying. But yeah, Aldi's is great because then you don't have to buy name brands. You just buy the one brand.
Yeah, I do a mix of both. We shop at Sam's a good bit and buy a lot of like fruits and vegetables and other things in bulk. But also buy, you know, a lot of things at Aldi. So it's a nice, mm-hmm. nice mix.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we are going to wrap this up. I think this has been so incredibly interesting and I hope leaves people with some inspiration for how to lead a full life, right? I love the, mm-hmm. the 3 keys you talk about. And just the idea of combining, all of these topics holistically to make some very intentional and positive changes in your life. And I particularly love a lot of the nutrition focus of today, because again, we don't talk about that a lot, but it is part of having a, you know, healthy and full life. So
yeah,
thank you.
Of course.
Yeah. We appreciate you coming on and thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. I really enjoyed our talk.
Yeah. Thanks, Deandra. Yeah.
Mike, you owe us a follow-up on the color of your pee, but we'll let you handle that offline if you'd like.
No. I got a cup right here. Let me just...
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, you could go to the bathroom. You don't need to like,
I don't need to do it on camera.
No, not on camera.
Deandra's like, not on, end this interview.
Right Deandra's now, like, please. Leaving me.
Okay.
She's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Okay, on that note, thank you again for coming on. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, bye, Deandra. Bye, Mike.
Bye. All right. Thanks everybody for listening. If you've been challenged or inspired by what you've heard, please rate and review the show. You can also subscribe to make sure you never miss an episode.
Yep. If you have any thoughts or questions, we always love to hear from you, and you can leave us a voicemail or text us at 404-981-3370. or you can hit us up on Instagram.